what will it do for you, or what will it do for your business when you accomplish that goal?
Hello there. Welcome back to the Wild Business Growth Podcast. This is your place to hear from a new entrepreneur every single Wednesday morning who's turning wild ideas into wild growth. I'm your host, Max Brandstetter, founder and podcast producer at Max Podcasting. And you can email me at max@maxpodcasting.com to save time with your high quality podcast. This is episode Hot Since 182. And today's guest is Diane Helbig. Diane is a business coach, leadership coach, business advisor, trainer, author, podcaster, pretty much everything, who is one of the best you'll ever hear at getting you to think inwards and truly do a deep dive about your business and business strategy. She is like talking to a business therapist. And in this episode, we talk everything from delegating to business strategy, communication, and tips that involved babysitting, candy, and lemonade. Maybe all at the same time, maybe not. It is Diane Helbig from the wonderful city of Cleveland. Thank you very much. Enjoy the show. Alrighty, we are here with Diane Helbig, my favorite fellow Clevelander, just a little Cleveland alliteration out the gate, but Helbig Enterprises sees this day just an amazing small business coach, advisor, workshop leader, author. We could keep going on with your title, but Diane, thank you so much for making time. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. And this is really cool. It's kind of come full circle across multiple generations here, because you and my dad, Greg, met at Podcast Movement, and like he has just not stopped raving about you. And so it was only a matter of time that he turned me on to you, and I've enjoyed the stuff that you put out and the insight and advice you share. And it was a no-brainer of, oh my God, we got to get Diane on the podcast. So,
oh, thank you.
So here we are.
He's a great guy.
Appreciate it. Yeah, he's okay. But we're going to get into some of your best tips for being in small business and growing small business and scaling your small business. But before that, I'd love to start off with, many entrepreneurs, when they think back, might have had a lemonade stand or a paper route or lawn mowing business. You had a lemonade stand, but you had a little bit of a different wrinkle to it. Can you share what that was?
Sure. I made it into a candy stand as well. So I would go up to the local market, little local store, get juicy fruit gum, and they were striped and they were in all these different flavors. And I would mix the flavors and roll them into a ball and then rewrap them. And so they were a combination, and I would sell lemonade and candy.
Oh my God. I can taste the juicy fruit. I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that name in a little while, but yeah. That's incredible. Not just were you selling candy, but you were concocting your own creations with it. What were the parents and kids that bought those custom products, custom juicy fruit balls, whatever you want to call them? What was their reaction to seeing something like that?
So, you know, actually, I don't remember parents ever buying them, but the kids did, because it, you know, really spoke to them. So my stand was a little different. You know, it was obviously during the summer, during the day, we had a lot of kids in our neighborhood. So there were a lot of kids around, and it wasn't the adults necessarily stopping and buying. And if they did, they were buying lemonade, nothing else. What I did attracted the kids to the stand.
To put a visual to these juicy fruit balls, like what did they look like? And did they taste the same?
So they did not taste the same. So they looked like if you took two sticks of gum and you rolled them up and then rewrapped the tin foil, whatever it is, around it and twist the ends. So, you know, it sort of looked like like a hard candy. Different flavors were matched with different flavors. So at some point there was duplication, but you never knew what you were getting because you couldn't see which flavors were in the package.
So you're inventing your own candy at age.
Yes.
Age yes. X. I love the early entrepreneurial and creative spirit. And you alluded to there being lots of kids in your neighborhood. And at some point, another entrepreneurial venture you had as a teenager now was creating a day camp for kids in your neighborhood. How did this come into life? Come to life, I guess, come into life as well.
You know, I had been babysitting for some of the families and summertime came. And I honestly don't remember how the idea came into my head, but I was talking with a friend of mine and said, you know, we could do this. We could watch these kids during the day and take them down to the lake and, you know, do arts and crafts sorts of things with them to get them out of their parents' hair, you know, for a couple of days. And so we just figured out what it would look like. It was only a couple of weeks, a couple hours a day, and went to the parents who we had been babysitting for and told them what we were doing. And every one of them signed up.
Oh my God.
I know. Sort of weird.
What do you think was that key to, I'm sure the word wasn't in your vocabulary back then, but what was your key for having such an incredibly high conversion rate with your, with your prospects at the time?
Well, we were both really good babysitters and we had really great, you know, if I can call them clients already, you know, we had parents who always, you know, she had parents who always called her. I had parents who always called me. We already knew the kids, you know, the kids were comfortable with us. And so for the parents, it was a bonus. It wasn't anything they'd ever done with their kids. Most kids just hung out all summer, rode their bikes, you know, did whatever, but there wasn't necessarily anything really structured for them to do where their parents then didn't have to worry about where they were.
What a terrible image of just being able to hang out and like be free and ride your bike. It's just so depressing, God. But I love that you started multiple businesses at a young age, which clearly set the course for your adult career. But when you look back, starting with the lemonade stand, this lemonade and candy stand. So you're the candy woman. What is a lesson that you learn really early on about business from doing that?
Voice, you know, a couple of things. One of the things I learned was that you have to enjoy what you're doing. You have to know something about what you're doing, but you really have to enjoy it. And one of the really big things that I realized was not everyone was going to buy and that was okay. But, you know, that wasn't my goal. And that, you know, kids are really okay with no. It's when we become adults that we get really uncomfortable with it. But I just learned that whoever was interested on that day was going to come and buy something. And if they liked it, they'd come back. And that all that was good. And the people who didn't come, that was good too.
Why do you think that is, that kids don't get as rattled with no?
They haven't really been exposed to a whole lot of social pressure around being accepted. That ends up happening later, like in high school. So there's something about, you know, being a young kid that it's just not in our vernacular. You know, we haven't had that experience. There's not a lot of emphasis put on being a certain way, being accepted, whatever those things are. It happens later in life. And then, unfortunately, it happens so much that it really becomes a very strong thing that teenagers and adults focus on, whether they realize it or not, they're focusing on it.
When you get hit with real life, I guess, and experience the real world, things start to hit a little bit different. And so you have to make sure that you're giving yourself, treating it, handling yourself appropriately.
Right.
And on the babysitting day camp side, in addition to you and your buddy being phenomenal babysitters, what is something you learn from that business that still applies to business today?
That you really have to have a structured strategy. So one of the things that I really learned from that was we had to know what we were doing with those kids every day, and we had to be prepared for it, which means, you know, we had to be creative. It's not so hard when you're a kid being creative about things like that, because you just remember things you enjoy doing, and then you do it with smaller children. But you do have to have all of the resources available to make sure that it's successful. So whatever you tell, what I learned was whatever you tell your client you're going to do, you actually have to do. There's got to be follow through. There's no one's really going to give you much grace if you tell them you're going to deliver one thing, but you deliver something else of lesser value.
So that segue just earned you a fantastic check in the mail. So thank you for that, because we're going to get into let me lick the stamp here. Wait, no, not lick the stamp. You know what I mean?
I do.
Today we learned that Max doesn't know how to mail an envelope.
But we used to lick stamps. It's okay.
That's true. Yeah, I'm thinking about a different time. Strategy is something that you specialize in terms of the small business owners that you advise and coach. And you have your business, Hell Big Enterprises, and a wing of that, Seize This Day, is really all about this advising and coaching for small businesses. And so it's obviously close to my heart and so many small business owners out there. But you've had an awesome career across different lines of business through sales and account executive and entrepreneurship and coaching. And there's so many lessons to choose from. Like I imagine the hardest part for you is narrowing down, like what are the main things to get across? But top of mind, what's the number one lesson for growing your small business over time that you usually start with?
It's a really good question. And I would say the one thing I always tell my clients is that they can do anything they want in their business. They just can't do it all at the same time. So they have to prioritize. They have to decide what is the one thing or two things that they want to focus on right now. The other things go in the parking lot. They can pull them out later if they determine that whatever they're working on now isn't really where they want to go or isn't going to get the result that they want, then they can let it go. You know, you have to monitor in real time. What I've noticed is most entrepreneurs are constantly having ideas or constantly being influenced by people saying, hey, maybe you should do this. You should offer that. You should whatever. And we have to be very careful about having too many initiatives on our plate at any one time.
I love how the way I teed up that question was that there's so many things to choose from that you really just need to, the hardest part is picking one or two mm-hmm. things. And your answer is exactly that applies to business. Is there's so many different routes you can go. And I'm sure as a small business owner, more often than not, you're talented in a lot of different areas, but you can't do them all at once. You can't do, odds are it's best to just focus on a couple of them. So that prioritization, which I need to make sure I sound out correctly, is super key. How do you advise business owners to find what they really should be doing?
So we do, the first thing we do is a strategy session where I just ask them a whole bunch of questions. And what I'm trying to get to is one of a couple of things. Either the thing that they are farthest along the road on that to completion is pretty short, or the thing they're most passionate about. A lot of times it's what are they actually working on, even when they have all these priorities? What are they defaulting to? I try and figure out what I want to know is really where is their head? What is the thing or things that are most important to them, are most exciting for them, are energizing, whatever that is, and are profitable. So that's all part of really digging down and seeing who are they, where are they, and what do they really want? Because we all think we want all sorts of things, but I feel like my job is to ask a lot of questions and really listen to what they're saying and not saying to get to, okay, if I'm hearing you correctly, this is what I think I'm hearing, so that we can just focus, right? Just narrow it down. And it works really well because they feel a sense of relief when they're like given permission to let something go or put it to the side.
What's the, I'll call it the poker tell, that lets you know that, wow, this is really something that energizes this person?
Oh, they light up. Their whole being lights up. They can articulate what it is and why it matters very clearly and succinctly. And they have a real why.
They've lit up, they're shining, the whole neighborhood is like, whoa, this person's like a light bulb. And mm-hmm. so you've identified what they're energized about. What's the next steps from there?
So the next step is I do what ifs, because I'm not going to make the decision for them. They have to make their own decisions in their business. So I will what if with them. And part of that what if is really actually saying, so what do you think would happen if we put these other things on the shelf and we just focused on this one that it seemed to me like you are really passionate about? And they have to think about it and they have to answer it. The other thing I do, I have two questions that I think are really, really important, and they go together. And the first one is, what will it do for you, or what will it do for your business when you accomplish that goal? Because I want them to, in their heart and in their head, to really be able to experience for themselves why it matters, what it means, what that outcome is going to do for them. And then the second question is, what will the outcome be if you don't go down this road? Because a lot of times there is no outcome. There's nothing negative if they don't pursue that, which means it's not really something that's high on the list.
I can just imagine, like, we've all been in that situation where we're like procrastinating with something and then you finally do it and you're like, oh, like I could have done that weeks ago or months ago. I feel like this, the same thing applies, you know, when you're making a mountain out of a molehill in terms of like a big business goal or something, is that your exercise, I can feel how valuable that would be to truly internalize, okay, how much of a difference does this actually make?
Exactly. Exactly. And they have to feel that. They have to identify what that difference is, what that importance or impact is.
So if you've decided on the things that are most important for you to work on, what do you do with all that other stuff that is out in the parking lot, as you described?
So I created this system, this what I call the silos system, because it's how my brain works best. And so I usually do the exercise with my clients, whether they use the system or not, doesn't really matter. But
bonus points for alliteration, by the way.
Ah, thank you. So
yeah, I know it's a very
how about for
exciting.
An anagram.
Yeah, extra brownie bonus points. Yeah,
cool. Because it stands for specific itemized list of objectives.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I know. Yeah, great, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To be honest, I temporarily forgot what anagram means. That's why I kind of wasn't clear with that response. So yeah, that's incredible. Alliteration times anagram probably equals MC squared or something. I don't even know, but
exactly.
So go on, silo.
Yeah. So when we've decided, let's say we've picked one thing that is something they really want to work on, we label a silo with that thing. And then we list at least the initial activities that have to happen in order to either continue moving in that direction or start moving in that direction. It just depends on where they are. Because a lot of times the reasons why people don't move forward is because their goal is big and they can't back up to what do I need to do right now to start that process. And goal, achievement is linear. It's one step after another. And usually there's steps that you can't do until you've done something else. So we back them up, but it's sort of a data dump of, okay, here's all the things we need to do. Okay, where do we need to start? What order do we need to do them in? And then we transfer them, those steps, to the calendar. So they put those activities on their calendar. Then all of those things that they're not going to do right now, just get their own silo, just one big silo. You know, you can call it the parking lot, you can call it whatever you want. All they just list them there so they get them out of their head. They know they're not going to forget them because they have them in a list, but they don't have to hold it in their head and they won't be thinking about it all the time because they've, in essence, let it go.
That we call it the write it down theory, the write it down approach. That's something that one of the things my dad taught me early on in business was it helps so much with peace of mind and just to think clearly, to write things down, write notes, and not try to keep it all in your head. And it sounds like that's kind of what you're describing with this dump of things. You know, we did a blog post for it for Hippo Direct, the family business. But even if you think you got it all in your mind, just using a post-it note or a notebook, or if that's Microsoft Word or Evernote, whatever you want to use, calendar things, that's the official name of it, calendar meetings, just getting that stuff separate and siloed, to use your words, and out of your mind, I feel like goes such a long way.
It really does. It really does. Because then you're not feeling like you've got so much in your head that you can't even think about the next thing. Now, the calendar is a really important part of the entire process, because most people I talk to are really good at creating to-do lists, but they don't necessarily get those things done. I used to do that. I used to carry this list around with me, and then I would just do the easy things and cross them off, but I wasn't really getting to progress. Using your calendar is how you get to progress. You take those things and you make them appointments with yourself.
I'm totally guilty of that as well, because I love, like, when I'm looking at the next week or the next day, like, I love, you know, tinkering with things and rearranging and making the list kind of an order of priority and my plan of attack to knock things out. Uh-huh. And then inevitably, some stuff you have to move to the next day because you just don't have the time for it. But right. there's some sort of excitement with putting the list and that plan together. And there's a peace of mind there as well. It's exactly like just writing stuff down.
Right.
In addition to the calendar, what would you say, which I know it sounds like this crazy breakthrough thing, like, we just invented a calendar. But what's another tool or even operating system, if you call it, that has been instrumental to your business career?
Gosh, so many. I honestly do have a paper calendar, but I also have, you know, my Outlook calendar.
hey, respect. I'm all for it.
Right.
My parents are like king and queen of the paper calendar. I always notice it whenever I visit, and I'm like, I miss this.
Right. I know. Well, part of the problem was I wasn't seeing things on my phone. Like, I wasn't seeing appointments, and so I was missing them. So I just,
right, yeah,
because, you know, do what works. Right. One of the things that I do, I color code my activities. So I have my podcast, that's one color. I do advising, that's another color, and in Outlook and on paper, so that with a quick look, I can really see where I'm spending my time. Is it not balanced? Because there's no such thing, but is it where it should be?
You read my mind. I was going to ask if that was online or offline. It is both. No, the color coding definitely helps to organize just a bit more. How about interacting with people on your team or your clients, or whether it be employees or freelancers over time, do you have any tips for being crystal clear with that communication?
Boy, yeah. So one of the things that I strongly, this is sort of a combination thing. I'm a huge advocate of verbal communication, and it can be over Zoom. It can be visual as well. But I think too many business people rely too heavily on email. And it slows the process down when we think this will be such a time saver and emails end up going back and forth and back and forth. It's not. Pick up a phone.
I was just going to send you an email about that.
Well, you can if we have a conversation first, because then sending a confirmation email where you summarize your understanding of the action items. It doesn't have to be everything the conversation was about, but what were the results of the conversation? Who's doing what, right? What is the expectation out of this is really helpful, because not only does it make sure that there's a record, there's a written record, but both of you can make sure you're on the same page, that you both heard the same thing. You understand that you made the same sorts of decisions and have the same sorts of deadlines. So that for me is really important. The other thing is, I think there needs to be consistent, I'll call them check-ins, temperature check sort of conversations that don't have to be lengthy. There should be an agenda just to make sure, and it depends on the company. It depends on how you work with your vendors or your people or whatever. I mean, sometimes just having a stand-up meeting first thing in the morning with everybody reporting out what they're working on can be great. It just depends on the organization. But having that verbal conversation eliminates a lot of work and a lot of miscommunication and misunderstanding and gaps in systems.
You hear about it growing up. People talk about how important communication is, but I think it's not really until like college projects, school projects, and then truly when you get to the real world that you realize just how super, you know, uber important it is. It's like the lifeblood of how businesses operate, and it can make or break the trajectory of a business.
Right. And it's not easy, but it's really important.
And you communicate... As part of your business, you do one-on-one coaching, but you also do workshops.
Yes.
What's different, obviously, besides the number of people? What changes in your approach when you do those two?
So when I'm doing a workshop, there's a very specific deliverable. You know, everyone knows that this is what we're going to talk about. This is what we're going to learn. They're very interactive. There's exercises that the people do. Like, they do most of the work. The attendees end up doing most of the work. It's not a lecture. And they work in groups. They work with each other to problem solve. So there's a lot of scenarios that I give that are real world scenarios and ask them to work through them for whatever the workshop's about, you know, whatever it is we're working on. That doesn't really happen in one-on-one in the same way. One-on-one, we're dealing with real world, but we're dealing with their business specifically, things that are happening, how decisions are being made, how conversations are being had, what's working, what isn't working, that kind of thing. Where with the workshop, it's more focused on one particular skill.
Just hearing the word lecture, like, brought me down for a second there. So I'm glad you take the more interactive problem solving approach. What would you say to someone who wants to have a coaching business one day and operate in both the one-on-one and the one-to-many workshop approach?
I would say make sure that you know what your strengths are as far as for workshops, you know, where your knowledge lies. And what I found helpful was, you know, come up with three topics that you could conduct a workshop around and lay out the agenda, just, you know, a rough like outline for it, what they're going to do, what they'll get out of it, that kind of a thing. And then practice it, you know, practice it on your friends or, you know, invite people to a free whatever so that you can work the bugs out. Make sure that you have exercises. And another thing I'll say is doing a virtual workshop and doing an in-person workshop is very different. Virtual workshops require a lot of activity that an in-person workshop does not. It's just sort of because of our attention spans. But the other thing is that adults learn by doing. Sorry.
No, you're good. It was just a joke that fell flat, which is on par for me. So, but sorry,
that the way that adults learn is by doing, by activity, by getting out of their chair, by, you know, problem solving with other people. So really, and when it's very difficult virtually, it's a very difficult thing to do because you need them to have their camera on and you've got to be asking them questions. Like they say with a virtual training, you have to engage every 2 minutes, something new, you know, to get them responding and interacting with you in order for it to have value.
It's taxing physically and mentally on the virtual side. You mentioned the outline for workshop, whether that be in person or virtual. How long is this?
You know, initially it does not have to be lengthy. It really is laying out 3 points that you're going to cover. And there's this magic rule of three. So it should never be more than 3 points that you are going to work on around one main topic, right? So figure out what your topic is, figure out what your 3 points are. And then you can go deeper if you want at some point you're going to have to go deeper under each point with, what is it you're going to share? What sort of exercise are they going to do? What conversation, you know, what discussion are you going to have with the participants once they've done the exercise? And then at the end, it's just, well, with workshops, what I do, the last thing I do in a workshop is I go around and ask everyone to say one thing that they're taking away from the conversation. Because it's an accountability thing, but it's also really interesting to see what resonates most with people. You know, what do they pick up that they think, wow, that was worth being here?
If you were at a workshop for podcasting and your main takeaway is, oh my God, I need a podcast for my business. But the second part of that main takeaway is, oh my God, I know that I cannot spend the time needed to have a podcast for my business. Hit me up. I'm your guy, Max at MaxPodcasting.com. I am here to take loads and loads of time off your plate and deliver that high-quality podcast that you and your business deserve. Max at MaxPodcasting.com. Let's save time with your high-quality podcast. Now, let's get a little bit more magical. Ooh, that was weird. So let's switch gears a little bit. Let's get to a segment on inspiration and creativity.
Okay.
And I want to start with your magic rule of three in terms of what three books have been the most influential to you as a business owner.
So the first one is Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Never heard of that. No, I'm just kidding.
Still relevant today. Fabulous book. Everyone should read it. The second one, I'm going to butcher the title of this book, but it's by Kevin Cruz and it's 15 productivity secrets highly successful people know or something like that. It's too long. Yeah. This is my problem. It's right. Just really, really
I know what you're referring to.
It's a great book. It's really.
It's that one with 15 in the title and a bunch of words after it.
Yes, exactly. And I think if you go to 15secrets.com, you can find it. Third one is Fascinate by Sally Hogshead.
Oh, fascinating.
Uh-huh. It's fascinating, right?
Cool. I appreciate it. It puts you through the gauntlet of the magic rule of three there. But it's always interesting to hear if it's like a newer book or one that's been around for a while, like what becomes the most influential. Outside of books, how do you find inspiration or what helps you to unplug and keep your ideas fresh?
I love going out of town or in town and just going to a hotel. There's something about getting out of my space that helps me just open up my brain and ideas flow and I can write almost anything. I can create programs. It's just a weird sort of, it's a weird unplug. That works really well for me.
I like the term weird unplug. I've never heard of that before, but I like that's right down my alley.
I just coined it. Great. Yeah.
Perfect. I'll start filing the trademark papers. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. You can have it. So that's one. But the other thing is being around really dynamic, enthusiastic business people. That totally charges me up. So like I'm a member of NABA, which is the National Association of Women Business Owners. And there's just an amazing energy being in a room with women who have businesses in all different industries, different sizes, different, you know, numbers of years that they've been in business, whatever it is, but they're motivational, you know, and their stories are always interesting and they're very supportive. That is great for me.
What stories are shared in those environments where after you kind of take a step back and go, wow, and truly feel motivated?
So the best stories for me are origin stories where the person shares how they got started, why they got started, maybe obstacles they ran into, challenges, and how they overcame them. I find that fascinating because it just reminds me every single time that it's not what happens to you that matters, it's what you do with what happens to you that matters.
Let's get to a fan favorite segment called the Wild Business Shoutout of the Week.
The Wild Business Shoutout of the Week!
Mm-hmm. Wild Business Shoutout of the Week. This is where we talk about a creative ad, creative marketing campaign, something that caught our attention. And this one actually is like a new and improved version, or maybe just it's a different iteration version of it that really all rolls off the tongue. But back in episode 120, I had my cousins, the Habers, on and their family business, Jay Marcus. And for this segment, they shouted out those Progressive commercials of don't be like your parents or becoming your parents, whatever the lingo is. And without hesitation, you brought this up as a potential thing to talk about as well. So we're going to get into it. But we joked in that episode that they should just keep making these forever and keep making, because there's so many lines like this that work for becoming your parents. And now, at the time of this recording, there's some new ones that tie to football and stadiums and parking lots that are a little too close to home. Diane, do you mind sharing the commercial you're talking about and why it just sticks with you?
Absolutely. So I love all of them, all the iterations, but there's one now that they are all standing in the parking lot at the stadium and they got there very early. And the first thing they're talking about is where they parked and why it matters. And the guy says, let's not talk about parking anymore. But then as they're walking to the stadium, the first thing they're talking about is when they're going to leave the game. And the guy says, let's not talk about leaving before we've actually gotten inside. And it's just so, I mean, who hasn't had that experience where you've gone someplace? And the thing that is most important for people who are their parents is leaving, knowing, you know, having that agreement. Well, we're only going to stay till the third quarter, or we're going to only stay till the seventh inning, or, you know, whatever it is. It's this agreement we have to make, this pact. It just cracks me up because it's so true.
It is. It's so great. I think that one might be my all-time favorite as well. Well, shout out my fiance, Dan, and I love the original ones where instead of quinoa, she pronounces it Keanu. but this one with the parking lot's really great because you got the zinger at the end that you mentioned with the, all right, well, let's not talk about this before we get in there. But just the nugget of parking being such a priority on your mind despite going to this game, which you probably care a lot about, is so funny. And it's, you know, we're binging Seinfeld right now, and I think like basically one out of every four episodes George makes a reference to a parking spot and how important it is for him to get a parking spot, or refusing to move if you get the right parking spot for weeks.
Right.
So I think that they hit kind of on the same with that, and that's obviously what Seinfeld and Larry David and that whole show was so spot on about, was just observing, you know, observational comedy, noticing all the little things that we all see, but you know, people don't think about too much.
Exactly. Right. But we do think about it when it happens and yeah. we have a little, you know, voice in our head, but it's great marketing because it's so memorable, right? I know the company that's doing it. I look forward to seeing those commercials, which I cannot say about most other commercials. So top of mind.
I'm looking forward to the next rendition, which stars me as I start to use a paper printout calendar.
Well, then I will have become my parents, right?
Exactly. So speaking of, what's the term you used? Weird unplug. Let's yes. get a little weird, a little unusual. So the unusual, pet peeves, quirks, weird talents. What is a weird talent or party trick? Something that you just have a knack for, but has no impact on your business whatsoever.
I can cut a deck of cards with one hand.
Ooh, how'd you mm-hmm. learn to do that?
I saw somebody do it once and it intrigued me, so I practiced.
Practice makes perfect. Practice makes hard.
Exactly.
How about pet peeves? What's your biggest pet peeve?
I think my biggest pet peeve is people not following directions.
Sorry.
And I'm guilty of it too. I know it's probably why it's my biggest pet peeve because I'm guilty of it too.
No, I'm pretty good with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so like with my podcast, I have a very specific ask of people who are going to be a guest. And I am amazed, and it's getting worse. I'm just amazed at how many people either don't read that part or totally ignore it and think I'm going to schedule them. And I'm not, you know, and it gets frustrating because it happens a lot more now than it used to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I feel you as a podcast host that, you know, the Wild Business shout out section that we just did, that, you know, I often include that in the outline and that can tend mm-hmm. to be missed as well. So, and then what's a quirk you have? Something a little quirky about your personality, but it's who you are. So nothing to be ashamed of. It's just something your family or friends, somebody calls you out for.
I'm really sarcastic.
Get out of town.
But I got a better one. I got a better one because this just happened when I was in Arizona. I put ice in my wine, whether it's white or red.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. That's this is gonna come off wrong. I'm not comparing you to my grandma, but my grandma.
Of course
does
you
that.
Are, because your grandmother does it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, right? The second part's true. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like shout out Grandma Adele, the queen of the ice and the wine.
Right on, sister. Seriously. I know my neighbor, that's when I knew it was okay to do, when my neighbor, who was very persnickety, said, my grandmother does that. And I thought, okay, good. Then apparently I can do this. But the other night, this woman I was with was having apoplexy. I mean, she, I had to tell her to look away when I did it.
Side note, persnickety is the word of the century. So
there we go. That's right.
I always enjoy when the guest uses words that you're like, oh my God, I forgot that was a word. So here we are. All right. Let's wrap up with some rapid fire Q&A. You ready for it?
Sure.
All right. Let's get wild. Let's get persnickety. If somebody's visiting Cleveland, what restaurant would you say you have to eat there?
There's so many. I'll say Luca downtown, Sarita in Lakewood. There really are. Summer House. There's just a ton.
You need to create your own Cleveland restaurant. I confused. I started saying west side of Cleveland and restaurant at the same time. We're into new territory here.
New word, yeah.
You have lived in both Ohio and Michigan, which these states never butt heads on the football field or not. But besides who you're rooting for, what's the biggest difference between Ohio State fans and Michigan fans?
Okay, well, so first of all, let me just say that I went to Michigan State, so nobody likes Michigan fans.
you just hate both those teams then.
Well, you know, yeah. Except when they're playing each other, I hate Michigan.
I'm with you.
So there really is a difference, though. The difference is that I think Michigan fans, U of M fans, are entitled and angry about it. And Ohio State fans aren't. They're really, it's amazing to go to an Ohio State football game. Just, it's an incredible energy. Everyone's very enthusiastic and happy and supportive. And it's just a different vibe.
I appreciate it. I think we just gained more Buckeye listeners, and the Michigan listeners are unsubscribing as soon as possible. So thank you. You win some, you lose some. And then what's one thing that makes a good babysitter?
Being able to get a child to go to sleep when they are afraid of, you know, the boogeyman.
Did you have a secret for doing that?
I did. You have to tell the child. Now, this may sound a little weird, and you know, but what I used to do is I used to say, I had a child who was afraid that, you know, a monster was going to come through her window at night. And so she was really afraid to be in a room alone. And what I told her was, I had little men on her windowsill who were there to prevent anything from being able to get in her window. So she didn't have to worry about it because I had my army, and she bought it.
I love it. The Cleveland Guardians of bedroom protectors. And then if you were starting a lemonade stand today, what's one thing you would do to differentiate?
I'd sell adult lemonade.
Ooh, you mean like vodka. Spiked? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I like it. I think that's what made mine take off as a kid. No, I'm just kidding. Now, Diane, this has been really, really special. So great connecting and learning from you and laughing and stories and appreciate you dealing with like corniness. Thanks so much for coming on and sharing your insights. Where's your favorite place for people to follow or connect with you?
Well, first of all, let me say, Max, I so enjoyed this. Thank you so much for having me on. This was a really fun conversation and got me thinking about things I haven't thought about in a long time.
Of course.
Good things. You know,
honored,
good
flattered.
Things. I would say, you know, going to my website, because that's really where everything is. So helbigenterprises.com is probably the best.
Perfect. I like it. Short and sweet and simple. Well, not you know what I mean. And then last thing, final thoughts, stage is yours. It could be a quote or word of wisdom or just another story about monsters outside the bedroom. Whatever you want. Take us home here.
It will be my favorite quote that I created, which is, I can only live in reality. Won't you join me here? So business owners, dream big, and which is fine. And at some point, we have to live in reality because that's how things actually get done.
That is the reality, as told by Diane. Thank you so much, Diane, for sharing your stories, your monsters, your candy, your business tips. And thank you, wild listeners, for tuning in to another episode. If you want to hear more wild stories like this one, make sure to follow the Wild Business Growth Podcast. Wild Business Growth Podcast on your favorite podcast app. And tell a friend about the podcast. You can also find us on Good Pods, where there's awesome podcast recommendations. And for any help with podcast production, you can learn more at maxpodcasting.com. Until next time, let your business run wild.
Bring on the bongos!